is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, hoop heads. Wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and they truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Also, make sure to check out the new Dr. Dish home machine. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Dan Madhavapullo, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering new subscribers 10% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code SAVE10 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its play bank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball.
Coaches, do you have a point guard or leader you're going to be counting on next season to run the show for you? Don't leave next season to chance. Thousands of coaches send their players to a point guard college camp each summer to learn to think the game, lead a team, and run the show. Your players will be smarter, better leaders, and better equipped to foster a championship culture next season in practice and in your locker room. I've seen firsthand how PGC camps have had a huge impact on players and coaches that I know, both on and off the court. You can go to pgcbasketball.com to find a 5-day, 4-night camp near you. That's pgcbasketball.com.
Basketball IQ, I think a guy can really learn from watching film. And I have good assistant coaches, Coach Rutter, Coach Reynolds, Coach Lowe. They do a great job of watching film with our guys and just continue to improve their IQ and their overall game.
Jack Owens is entering his fifth season as the Miami University men's basketball head coach after spending the previous 9 seasons in the Big Ten at Purdue University. Owens also spent 5 seasons as an assistant coach at Southern Illinois. He began his coaching career at Howard Community College, followed by 1 season at Barton County Community College, and 1 season at Eastern Illinois. Jack began his collegiate playing career at Murray State and played a season at Howard Community College before playing 2 seasons at Eastern Illinois. If you're looking to improve your coaching, please consider joining the Hoopheads Mentorship Program. We believe that having a mentor is the best way to maximize your potential and become a transformational coach. By matching you up with one of our experienced mentors, you'll develop a one-on-one relationship that will help your coaching, your team, your program, and your mindset. The Hoopheads Mentorship Program delivers mentoring services to basketball coaches at all levels through our team of experienced head coaches. Find out more at hoopheadspod.com or shoot me an email directly, mike@hoopheadspod.com. Follow us on social media at hoopheadspod on Twitter and Instagram, and be sure to check out the Hoopheads Pod Network for more great basketball content. Jot down some notes as you listen to this episode with Jack Owens, men's basketball head coach at Miami University in Oxford, Ohio.
Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klintzing here this morning without my co-host Jason Sunkel, but I am pleased to be joined by Jack Owens, the head coach at Miami University. Jack, welcome to the Hoopheads pod.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Excited to be able to have you on and talk a little Miami Redhawks basketball. Let's go back in time to when you were a kid. Tell me about how you got into the game of basketball. What was some of your first experiences with the game?
Well, it was just something I did. Growing up in Indianapolis, I played, multiple sports from, basketball, football to baseball. And, we had a community center there in Indianapolis called Riverside. And that's just where I spent a lot of my time playing basketball, playing football and baseball, but really enjoyed the game of basketball, obviously.
And when you think back to that time, Was there ever a moment where you started to focus exclusively on basketball? Because there's a lot of talk out there now in the basketball world and in the sports world in general, when we're talking youth sports, about kids specializing and only being a one sport athlete. So how do you feel like, for you being a multi-sport athlete, what did that do for you as a young kid? And then was there a time where you exclusively started playing basketball?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, to be honest with you, we did those things. I think my parents pushed us in those things to stay, so we stay out of trouble, you know, and just be around good people. And I was very fortunate to have a guy, Tony Johnson, who's actually still at Riverside, was a guy who brought me in and was like a, you know, father figure to me. And, you know, he's a guy that, you know, my mom and dad trusted and allowed me to be around a lot. But I do like guys who play different sports. You know, I think, you know, you find guys who play football or whatever other sport they're playing. There's a level of toughness or just, you know, well-rounded guys and just good athletes that you find that play different sports. So I don't think it hinders you. It can take away from some of your recruitment if you're playing a spring sport, you know, where it comes in and affects your AAU tournaments or those sorts of things. But other than that, you know, a guy who plays football and transition to basketball, there is a period of time. I know when I played high school football, you know, it took me 3 or 4 weeks to get acclimated to basketball, you know, just from the conditioning standpoint and just finding my rhythm. But I do find guys who play multiple sports, they're well-rounded athletes overall.
Yeah, it's interesting when you start talking about multi-sport athletes, and there's obviously pluses and minuses to both sides of that equation, like you said, in terms of being able to transition from whether it's football to basketball or missing AAU in the spring. I do think, though, that one of the other things that I've heard and talked about coaches with is when you're playing a different sport, and maybe if basketball, obviously, if you're being recruited, especially at the Division I level, chances are basketball is probably your number one priority. But you may have to play a different role if you're on the football team or you're a soccer player or whatever it could be. And sometimes that helps kids to be able to adjust and have a better understanding of what it means to not just be the star, but maybe they're a role player in another sport, and that can help them adjust, especially as they're making that leap from high school basketball to college basketball. Do you find that to be something that you see as a coach over the course of your career?
Yeah, no question. I think at some point you will identify what sport that you have a chance to move on in. You know, I'll give you a story. Javon Etzler, you know, he was a guy who played that's here in Miami that played middle school football and didn't play because he elected to go, you know, just down the basketball path. You know, he didn't play any other sport, but his senior year, his parents called me and thought, you know, they wanted my input on if he should play football his senior year. You know, as a college coach, I was thinking like, man, I don't want him to get hurt. But, you know, thank God that, you know, he didn't have any injuries and he was able to play in those relationships and you know, those times as a, you know, high school student athlete that I think those memories he's going to have for a lifetime. But I did not want to, persuade him either way. You know what I mean? But as his coach coming in, I was sitting there like, man, why go out now? But no, I didn't want to be a hypocrite either, because I thought, you know, I wanted his family and him to make the best decision for him. And then obviously he had a great, last year they were playing football, and then obviously he had a great basketball run his senior year.
That put you in a little tough position to answer that question, right?
It was difficult, but like I said, it, you know, I think those memories he's going to have for a lifetime with his friends that they play with, and they had a, you know, they had a great team as well. They were a good football team, and those experiences, you know, I think, like I said, he's going to have for a lifetime with those guys.
At that point, obviously, you're still, you know, he's not on campus with you guys, so you had obviously built a pretty good relationship with the family at that point, if they're calling you up and asking for your advice to, you know, put their trust in you and getting your opinion. When you think about that from a recruiting standpoint, how do you go about, what's your methodology for building a relationship with not only the recruit themselves, but also their inner circle, whether that be their family, whether that be their high school coach or AAU coach? Just talk a little bit about how you go about in the recruiting process building not just the relationship with the recruit, but also with the people that are around them?
Another great question. This is extremely important. You know, you're talking about, you know, the people that are close to him. You know, there's like, it's like a pie, you know, that you draw, and obviously the recruits in the middle of it. But, you know, you have his, you know, their parents, their grandparents, their girlfriend, their pastor at their church, whoever have influence, you need to have some sort of relationship with them, because as we both know, when you get to college, there's going to be tough times. No matter where you go, what level you go, there's going to be times where you're going to need to talk to someone, and those people, you know, you need to have a relationship with those people, because you need to be on the same page with them. And that's very important, especially with the times that we're in, with the rules changing and those things, that you need to have relationships with everyone that comes in encounter with the student athlete that you're going to have on your team.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt, especially as you said, with the rule changes. How do those rule changes, from your perspective as a Mid-American Conference school, what are some of the things, the issues that the rule changes raise for a school at your level specifically? Because we hear different things about different levels and how, okay, so a mid-major school, you develop a kid for as a freshman and sophomore. Now there's a chance that they're going to go and get recruited by a high-level major Division I school. And then conversely, you hear about, well, a guy goes to a high major and maybe they don't play as much and now they may transfer down. So just what impact are you seeing? What are you trying to anticipate as you talk about putting together your roster under these new rule changes?
Yes, it makes it somewhat difficult, but at the same time, it goes back to the relationship that you talked about, and having those relationships, obviously with the recruit, with the family, with the AU coaches, high school coaches, those things are very important. But at any level, I think it's going to impact it in a certain way, you know, because with the one-time transfer, you know, a student athlete has the ability to leave after 1 year. You know, I just, you know, you just think that guys will continue to make the best decisions for them, because, you know, the data is out there. You know, I saw a tweet where guys who go down a level, go up a level, whatever it may be, at the end of the day, you just hope the student athlete make the best decision for themselves and their families, so they have the opportunity to be successful. You know, and I think that's the most important thing, is that you want the student athlete to be successful, and we know the percentage of guys playing the NBA and those kind of things as well, so you know, don't get lost in the education part as well. You know, usually, you know, student athletes that value education and they understand the importance of getting a degree and then also having the opportunity to play, you know, and that varies for everyone. You know, like I said, guys have gone up, had success. The guys have come down and had success. I just think it depends on who the individual is. But like I said, the data's out there in regards to guys who have left our level and gone up, and how they perform. And I just think you just have to continue to educate your student athletes on those things. But at the end of the day, you want what's best for every student athlete, and you hope their quality experience, you know, during their college years is at a high level. And that's what we try to provide here at Miami.
All right. When you're thinking about those relationships and you're thinking about helping kids to make good decisions, both when they're considering whether or not to come to Miami in the first place, and then once you have them on your roster and you're trying to maximize what their college experience is like, both from a basketball standpoint, from an academic standpoint, one of the keys to that is the same thing that we talked about in terms of recruiting, is how do you build that relationship? How do you build the culture that makes Miami, makes your program a place that guys want to be a part of, both when you're recruiting them initially out of high school and once they're in the program? What are some of the things that you're doing that you think make Miami basketball a special place?
Well, first of all, we put education as a driving force, but also building authentic relationships and just being honest. You know, I think when you're transparent and you just, you know, putting the facts, the data out there, and just being honest with recruits and their families, and like I said, just continue to build those relationships where you know, they understand you have their best at heart. I think, kids still trend towards, you know, wanting to be in the right situation. You know, obviously, like I said, the rule change, you know, we've been very fortunate this year as of today, every guy who played last year is coming back to Miami. I think those are the things that we concentrate on. We're really not worried about everyone else. We just want to continue to build authentic relationships and just being truthful and understanding that, you know, we want to take another step and be a team that can be a consistent winner in our conference, but also having relationships and that are lifelong lasting. And also, you know, a degree from Miami, you know, carries a lot of weight as well. So just being authentic and recruiting the right kind of guy as well, you know, that values those things and not necessary. Just want to leave. You know, we want to identify guys that we believe fit our system. We want it to work for every recruit, and we understand that might not be the case every time, but for us, we try and we want to put every guy in position to be successful here, but also we want to put ourselves in position to win a championship while doing so.
Absolutely. When you are evaluating the list of guys that you're considering recruiting, you start to narrow that list down. And you're getting out, hopefully eventually here back out on the road once we get past COVID. Hopefully we're getting towards the tail end of this whole thing. But when you're out on the road and you're evaluating players, or your assistants are evaluating players, and you're watching a player in oftentimes two distinct environments, you may watch them with their high school team and then you watch them in an AAU setting. What are you looking for in each of those settings? Is it the same thing? Is it something different? Do you approach the evaluation process when you're watching a kid in high school and maybe look for something different than you do in AAU? How do you balance the evaluation between those two settings?
Well, first of all, in both settings, you want to take a guy that wins. You know what I mean? I think if you can take a guy that has a winning background. So you take a guy, you know, that won at the high school level, at a high level, then you go watching with his AU team. They're winning. But at the same time, you want to take guys who play hard, that play the right way, where there's not a lot of deep programming when you get a guy, to be honest with you, but also fit your system. You know, we have a style that we want to play. You know, it's pretty simple, man. We're a man-to-man defensive team, and you know, we're a motion offense team that require player and ball movement. So I try to identify guys with a basketball IQ and a skill level, but also with a level of toughness that wins. You know, you want guys who win at a high level, and that's what we try to identify, and guys who play the right way, and obviously size, skill, and all those things come into play as well that you need at certain positions. So those are the things that we try to identify along with guys who are taking care of their business from an academic standpoint.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so let's eliminate and just assume that a kid that you're recruiting has the requisite basketball skills, the size, that kind of thing, and that academically they're going to be a good fit at Miami. What's the number one? If you had to identify one intangible, okay, you mentioned a couple of them. You mentioned winning. You mentioned toughness. But if you had to identify the one thing that you would look for as an intangible in a player who meets all the other criteria, what's that number one thing, and why would that be the most important thing to you?
For me personally, you got to have a level of toughness, you know, to play at any level. But a basketball IQ is very important for us as well. You know, just knowing how to play the game. And what I mean by that is, you know, we want guys that obviously can play with the ball in their hand and play without it as well. You know, I think when you look at the guys that we've been able to recruit and land here in Miami that also have success, like a guy like Day-Day Grant from Lorraine. You know, he was all conference as a sophomore. I believe he was the only sophomore to be all conference. You know, he was a guy that won at a high level in high school. He won in AAU. But his skill level in regards to, you know, the way he was able to make shots and make plays and his toughness translate. You know, I think those are the kind of things you look for. When, you know, I know you said one thing, but, you know, I also thought he was a tough kid. And I thought that we could help him in regards to, you know, playing within our system and playing with other guys, because he had the knack to score and score points in bunches. So, you know, those are the kind of guys we try to identify and believe that they can have success here at Miami.
It's interesting that you said basketball IQ, because I think when I talk about, or when I think about the types of guys that I would want on my teams or guys that I like to play with, it was always the guys with high IQ. And there's some players that you and I both know that you can put them in a gym by themselves and look at the skill level and it just pops. And you're like, man, this guy's unbelievably skilled. And then you put him in a game and you're like, man, I wouldn't want to play pickup basketball with that guy for anything, because he just doesn't, you know exactly the type of player that I'm talking about. And you can go into a gym, and again, whether it's AAU or it's high school or whatever, pickup game, and you can identify that basketball IQ. It's kind of like, you know, there's nine players out there playing basketball, and then this guy is a basketball player. So obviously you're trying to get those guys in the door. Once you get them in the door, what are some things that you do to try to help players continue to develop and improve their basketball IQ within the system that you guys are putting together, both offensively and defensively, that you talked about a minute ago? How do you help them continue to grow in that area in their basketball IQ? Because I think that's something that coaches sometimes struggle with, is how to help players to make reads out on the floor. Yeah, we can help them develop their skill, but developing that basketball IQ is something else. So how do you do that?
You know what? We watch a lot of film. And what we try to do is also take our workouts to implement what we do from an offensive standpoint, on the offensive end as well, you know. But from a basketball IQ, I think, you know, a guy can really learn from watching film. And I have good assistant coaches, Coach Rutter, Coach Reynolds, Coach Lowe. They do a great job of watching film with our guys and just continue to improve, their IQ and their overall game. Because sometimes, you know, guys coming from, you know, the high school level, they don't watch as much film. Some do, as some high schools do for sure, but sometimes you get guys to campus and you're able to watch film with them. It really helps them see things on the court from the standpoint of how we want to play. Just want to continue to improve their overall basketball IQ, but also from a defensive standpoint as well. You know, I think guys can learn a lot from watching film on both sides of the ball. And we spend a lot of time doing so in the film room.
Hey, hoopheads, we all hate ankle sprains, and they happen way too often. Ankle injuries are the number one sports-related injury. Arise is trying to change that. With the iFast, your athletes get preventative protection and full mobility. Athletes no longer need to wear bulky braces that limit performance and give mediocre protection. Anyone playing sports should be using these products. Keep your athletes in the game. Don't wait for them to get hurt to take action. Visit www.arise.com/teampricing to learn more. That's ARYSE.com. How much time, let's break it into two distinct parts. During the season, how much film are you watching with your players? How much are they seeing? And then maybe transition to how much are they watching in the off season, where I'm assuming it's more skill development, you know, skill development based, maybe working on them individually. So just talk a little bit about over the course of the year, how does the amount of film they watch ebb and flow in a given week, or, you know, whatever, during a certain time frame?
Yeah, just to tackle what you said, during the off season, it is about skill development, and also, you know, you want the individual player to get to, you know, you want them to improve. So it's a lot of individual work that we invest in our guys in regards to trying to improve their overall skill. But then when the season hit, you know, it's majority team. You know, with the outside stuff the guys do on their own, and we do skill work and practice as well, but a lot of it is tailored towards our team setting. But during the season, it's a lot of film, you know, and in regards to watching who you might play, watching you know, our games, and we do watch them. A lot of film on us, you know, in regards to the things that we need to do better. And we have, you know, all the stats and things that we do, where we stat practice to games, and obviously we want that to carry over to the games. But we do watch a lot of film on our opponent as well, just preparing for the game. And then after the game, each guy has to get in with his individual coach and watch his individual clips as well. So that, you know, that alone is a lot of time. When you're talking about watching film of yourself, your opponent, and then after the game, getting in and watching your individual film and how you played in the game is how we do it throughout the season.
When you guys as a staff are putting together those clips that you're going to share with players, how do you balance out the, I'm going to say, the positive and negative? In other words, when you're watching a player and you have the clip and you say, okay, here's something that you did really well. If you could do it like this every time, that'd be terrific. Versus, hey, here's a mistake that you made. This is something that we have to correct. Is the balance close to 50-50, or how do you guys approach that positive, negative spin and when you're watching film with your guys?
Right, we spend a lot of time watching film, and in regards to, you know, things that we try to correct and what guys are doing well. You know, we just try to continue to improve. You know, after every game, you know, and it does require, you know, a lot of film, because what we do is, like I mentioned earlier, is that we watch film before we play a game, we watch film after the game, and then each guy try to get in with their individual coach and dive into their individual film after every game.
How much during the season, how much individual player development would you say you're doing during an average practice? And then we can kind of get into a little bit of how you design your practices to maximize your efficiency and what you're getting out of your day-to-day. But how much individual skill development, once you're into your actual schedule and you're playing games, how much skill development are you getting in on a daily basis?
Yeah, we do a lot of shooting, passing in every practice. We go 2 hours, you know, so we can go anywhere from 30 to 45 minutes of skill work a practice, you know, in regards to, it could be individual, it could be a group setting, it can be position work. It varies, you know, and you just want to continue to stay sharp, you know, and what we try to do is focus on our team as much as we can and just try to get better. But then we will dive into, obviously, who we're playing in regards to our opponent.
What's your methodology for building a practice plan? So when you're sitting down with your staff and you're thinking about what you want to accomplish day in and day out, what are some of the keys for you to designing a practice that's going to derive the maximum benefit for your team?
Yeah, you know, it varies, but the same time is pretty consistent in regards to where we do get skill work in. You know, we do run sets, so but we also have motion offense. That's a read and reaction. So we will work on our offensive portion every practice, and definitely from a defensive standpoint, we work on our individual defense and our team defense. And the thing is that we try to hit on that with some sort of transition defense as well. In every practice, along with rebounding. So those are the things that we try to hit on every practice. You know, when you're building a practice, like every coach in the country, and you want to identify things that you need to continue to improve at as well. And those are the things that we work on as well. So from skill development to offensive execution, to you know, individual defense, to transition defense, and then the game, obviously, it's a lot of ball screen action that you have to defend. So we do those things daily in practice.
In your mind, how has, since you got into coaching earlier in your career, how has the way the game is played changed and impacted you as a coach in terms of your philosophy, both offensively and defensively? You think back to, again, let's go back to the early 2000s when you started your coaching career, and the number of ball screens that were part of the game then compared to now is obviously a lot less, and the three has become increasingly important season by season. So maybe just talk a little bit about how the changes in the game have affected the way that you put together your philosophy of how your team plays, both offensively and defensively.
Yeah, great question. It changed a lot. I finished up in 99, and I don't think we had – I don't think I went off a ball screen, you know.
I agree. I tell people that all the time. It's crazy.
And I don't think I defended a ball screen as much. But now as we transition, you know, 20-plus years, that is a big part of what you have to be able to defend. And for us, we have added it to our package, you know, because it is effective. And anytime you can add skill, a guy with quickness and skill coming off a ball screen, if you can add a big guy or a guy that can set a screen and pop, and you can put those guys in a ball screen situation, it requires the defense to defend it a certain way. So, you want to put your team in the best position to score, and we have implemented a ball screen series for our team as well. But man, it's definitely changed a lot, from when I played and to now, to where you have to be able to defend it, but at the same time, it can be an effective offense as well. We try to spend, you asked about the 3-point shot as well earlier, and just want to hit that real quick. You're right. We were a 3-point shooting team at Eastern Illinois where I played, in regards to guys driving in, kicking the ball out. But the game has really changed to where, from an analytical standpoint, the pull up is a, I believe a lost art or consider a bad shot. You either want a shot at the rim or you want a three, based on the data. But I like the in between shot, and we work on that. But now the game has really changed to where we've embraced the three.
Yeah, it's amazing just when you think about, as you said, like never having come off a ball screen and never defended a ball screen. I can honestly count. I played from 88 to 92, and I can honestly say that if I ran 5 ball screens in my entire 4-year college career, it was a lot. And then the other thing that's part of the game now that didn't exist, probably, I know it didn't exist when I played, it probably didn't exist when you played. I can't remember a time when I was playing the game where I drove in underneath the basket and then turned around and kicked the ball backwards to a guy behind the 3-point line. And you think about those reads and how important that ability is to penetrate and kick. And it just didn't exist in the same way that it does for kids today. All right. So my final question for you today is, I want to have you look ahead in the next year or two and tell us a little bit about what you think your biggest challenge is that you have in front of you. And then number two, when you wake up in the morning and you come into the office as the head coach at Miami, what is the biggest joy that you get from what you currently do?
Oh, man. I think the biggest challenge, the next few years is just being able to keep our team together. I think with the rule change, I think for every coach in the country, you just want to be able to keep your team together for a lot of reasons. Continuity is one. Your team chemistry, you want your team to be able to grow. So that's very important. And then the ultimate joy is just, being here in Miami and being able to watch our guys grow and develop, and just watch guys, transitioning from their freshman year to their senior year is something I definitely, is a truly an honor to be a head coach here in Miami from that standpoint of not just from a basketball standpoint to see someone grow, but to see a young man come in as a boy and become a man. Those are the things that bring a lot of joy to me, staff and the program, watching guys develop and grow on and off the court.
Yeah, absolutely. Not just as a basketball player, but as a human being. Before we get out, Jack, I want to give you a chance to share how people can learn more about you, how they can connect with you and your program. So if you want to share some social media, the website, whatever you want to share, how people can reach out to you after they listen to the podcast, and then I'll jump back in and wrap things up.
Yeah, I mean, Miami Basketball on Twitter, on Instagram. Those are the ways that you can keep up to date with us, and I'm personally on Twitter as well. Any of those outlets, you can follow Miami Basketball and stay up to date and obviously in touch with us here at Miami.
Fantastic. Jack, I cannot thank you enough for taking the time out of your schedule. Really appreciate you jumping on the Hoopheads pod with us.
And to everyone out there, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoop Heads presented by Head Start Basketball.